League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union Podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the belatedly festive voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good afternoon, Matthew. Normally good morning, but good afternoon. Belatedly festive indeed.
Not that you have delayed your festivities for Christmas, you're just late, to this particular podcast, which has started with some lovely Christmas music.
Well, there you go, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that. It's a lovely time of the year, isn't it, Josh?
It's the most wonderful time of the year, boss. And we are going to... This is Christmas Eve. So, I mean, who knows whether people are going to be listening to this on Christmas Day. Perhaps this can be what people can fill their little Christmas break in between breakfast and dinner, and then dinner and, I don't know when people open presents, but dinner in the evening. Perhaps this can be what they do for 45 minutes to an hour.
I kind of feel like everybody does a Christmas special. You know, can this be a Christmas special? But it's not, I don't know, without wanting to like undersell what we're about to talk about, it's not particularly special. It's just a regular podcast.
It is just a regular podcast, yes. However, let's relate Christmas to goalkeeping. How about we do that instead?
Okay, go on. You go ahead.
Well, I mean, you mentioned before that it's the day of peace and then everything tends to go crazy. So can that be brought back to goalkeeping in a way?
I mean, I can try. I mean, that's just true for what we do, in that I love Christmas Day because it's the day of the year that my phone is quite quiet, other than the standard kind of Merry Christmas text that of course you get from everybody and people that you haven't heard from since last Christmas. But then after that, it then goes a bit crazy Boxing Day onwards. Of course, the number of games are our Boxing Day, 29th, 30th, New Year's Day. And then, of course, the window opens. So it does go a little bit crazy. So Christmas Day is kind of like the calm before the storm.
It's kind of like, if we're going to make it topical, the Fraser Forster of the current goalkeeping world.
Yeah, I guess we could do that, because we are going to be talking about Fraser very shortly.
We are. On with the show.
Let's do it.
So we shall start, in fact, straight away with Fraser Forster. Tottenham 3, Liverpool 5. And all eyes on the Tottenham goalkeeper, quite literally too, with the camera in his face just moments before kickoff. This wasn't a long lens either. This was a guy on the pitch right in front of his face, following him around for about 10 seconds. And I'd love to know your thoughts on this, and goalkeepers just before a game having that kind of disruption, especially when you know, Fraser Forster knows right there and then, that the only reason that camera is in his face because of what happened in midweek against Manchester United. We'll come on to that because, yes, much talked about that performance. And then he goes into this game, all eyes on him, and his first proper action, pretty much 2 minutes in, he passes the ball straight to Mo Salah.
He does. Firstly, I must correct you. It was 6-3, not 5-3. But that's okay.
Was it really?
It's okay. Christmas.
Wow. Okay.
It was 6-3. I mean, it's a great start. Really solid start for the show. Okay. But yeah, they did get a sixth towards the end, unfortunately, for Fraser. Because they got themselves back into it. But yes, just to touch on your point, it was exactly that. Like, you could, again, I never really had it. And again, I'll try and relate things back to, you know, what I played and whether there was anything similar to this. Never played in a game of this magnitude. So that obviously played a part in this. But you do know, if there's a situation like that, that there's a reason that the camera is in your face, and that, and of course, the likes of Gary Neville, whoever it might be, that are then talking about you, and there is that much more focus on you, and you kind of hope a day like that might be a quiet day. And the thing is, I actually felt for Fraser Forster in this game, in that, yeah, you know, conceded six. You actually look at the goals individually, there's nothing that bad in there, but of course, with so much focus on you, so much focus on Spurs at the moment. I saw some stats recently as to how they've done so far in December, in that they are effectively bottom of the league in terms of the number of shots conceded, number of XG conceded, you know, everything else that comes with it. So, you know, I think whether it was Fraser Forster or anyone else, they would be in a tough spot at the moment. But of course, there is that much more focus on him given what happened during midweek.
Can we talk about midweek and the game against Man United?
We can. We can. And do you know what? It was one that obviously there's two big errors in particular that naturally have been focused on. And you look at them. The first one's so tough. It just comes back to that I think where goalkeeping has changed. Look, credit to Fraser Forster in that he is trying to play the way in which the manager is insistent they play. And it's just something that, again, so many other goalkeepers haven't grown up playing that way. And you can see he's trying to do it and it's not particularly natural. And I do think, and this is where I give credit to Eddie Howe, in that I think he has adapted Newcastle to fit a Nick Pope, and Nick Pope has been brilliant for them, you know, and so many of the attributes that a Fraser Forster and Nick Pope can bring to a team can really be highlighted when you're playing according to that. Whereas I think when you're so firm in your beliefs in terms of how you want to play and you need the goalkeeper to play that way, it's so difficult when you've got a goalkeeper that hasn't grown up playing that way. Now, I don't mean that to come across as harsh to Fraser Forster, but of course, that's not his game. Like, he's a big guy, brilliant in terms of, you know, one-on-ones, shot stopping, etc. Like, you've seen it over the years, Southampton, some great moments, Celtic, of course. And I just think that it's so tough. You're trying to place a goalkeeper like that and make them play a certain way, which isn't that natural. And it's so tough to pick up as an older goalkeeper, trying to play this, you know, playing into the six, bouncing it out, clipping to fullbacks, wingers, whatever it might be. It just doesn't. It doesn't quite fit. And again, you just wonder whether, if you're the manager, do you then just shift ever so slightly to allow that sort of element of risk not to be there? And I just felt with this, like the first one in particular, I mean, it wasn't far off in terms of making the pass. Again, whether it was the right pass to make, my thinking in that moment ordinarily would have been to clear lines and to get the ball up the field. Of course, he's been told to play a certain way, so he's tried to play the ball, just slightly misjudged it, they've scored the goal. And then the second one, it did almost feel like when the ball's come back, he was so relaxed on it. I don't know whether that was trying to almost give off an element of, yeah, I'm fine, I can play this way, and of course gets closed down, and it's a tough moment.
There was, however, one of the most enjoyable saves I think I've seen in a long time from Forster in that one, the old kick save.
Yeah, I know this particular save did draw a little bit of attention from the commentators. I mean, look, this comes back to a point that we've made so many times on the podcast, and that often there's no right or wrong way. Now, does it look particularly pretty? No, and there's arguments in terms of different techniques could have been used there, but I think it is that one. Ultimately, you kind of look at a save. Now, if you can collect it and gather it, then 100%, that's always a way to go. If you can't, then when we talk about parrying into a good area, getting good distance on the parry, well, of course, if you can get it away from danger and a long way away from danger, then you've done your job. Now, again, I go back to, is it textbook? Is it one that goalkeeping enthusiasts are going to look at and really enjoy? Possibly not, but ultimately he's got the job done.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. Just to finish on this one before we move on, Altay Bayindir took some stick in that game as too. I saw a few headlines about whether we've ever seen two worst goalkeeping performances in the history of football. And yeah, I thought that was obviously very harsh, but he did take some stick. I guess it's stupid to ask you foul or no foul.
Yeah, it's a foul.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a foul. I mean, look, again, you can have the argument as to should he be stronger? You know, all the usual cliches can come in now as to, you know, what he could have done in that moment, what other goalkeepers might have done in that moment. But ultimately, when you see it again, he's gone to put his hands up, and we speak about it so often. It doesn't take that much contact to actually impact a goalkeeper when they're trying to catch the ball or punch the ball. You know, you're talking a few millimeters and you might miss the ball. And essentially that's what's happened here. Like, he's gone up with two hands. He's only able to get one hand up in the end, isn't able to make contact to the ball, ends up in the net. But the reason he couldn't get his second hand up was because of the attacking player. So it is a foul, but naturally it's not going to be one that's seen positively by a lot of outfield pundits. And naturally a lot of people will look at it and question as to whether he could have done more.
Okay, moving on to Villa Park, Aston Villa 2, Manchester City 1. First, Emi Martinez. Now, there isn't really much more, I don't think, that we can say about Emi Martinez. We've pretty much covered him extensively over the past few years, but he did win the best men's goalkeeper for the second time in 3 years. That's the FIFA best, I think it's called, isn't it? The FIFA best men's goalkeeper for the second time in 3 years. And it just made me think of an interview we did with Neil Cutler way back when Emi Martinez had joined Aston Villa, I think just a few months after. And he was talking about the fact that Emi Martin has had this unflinching goal, this unflinching desire to be the number one goalkeeper in the world. And they had a load of things set up, from, you know, notes in his locker that he had to tick off after each training session. And it just goes to show, doesn't it, that hard work pays off, because for the second time in 3 years, he's managed to achieve that goal, which is quite incredible. And there was a moment in this one where two defenders, and this wasn't picked up anywhere, I think you had to be really eagle-eyed to see this, but the first goal that was scored by John Duran and the pass from Youri Tielemans was initially started by the pass from Martinez to Tielemans. And you could see in the replays that both defenders, Ezri Konsa and Pau Torres, were quick to turn around and give Martinez a point, as if to say, you started that.
Yeah, and do you know what? That also, I wanted to bring up something in this pod. I had a few people send me this in terms of a comment that Jamie Carragher made. I think it was in regards to David Raya, a pass he's made. He made a silly comment along the lines of, like, you know, it should be banned that a goalkeeper can pass it forwards, you know, pass it into the six, you know, because so many goals have been conceded that way. But this is exactly the reason as to why they do it. Emi Martinez, foot on the ball, waits for the right moment, picks the right pass, and it's literally one pass, turn, another pass, in on goal, and ends up in a goal. And that's what these teams are looking to do. I know it's so basic, but that is in its purest form and in the best possible way you can see, in that it's not always this simple, of course, but that is why they do it. And it's a lovely pass from Martinez. And going back to what you said before, do you know, I kind of feel with Martinez, and I might be wrong in saying this, and I know a lot of people do really rate him, and, you know, he is considered one of the best in the Premier League, you know, arguably the best given the awards that he's won. But I kind of feel like he's one of those goalkeepers that it will be when he retires that people look back on him and say, like, my God, he was good. You know, and I don't know whether that might just be my opinion and belief, given that maybe because he's playing in a team that aren't winning the league year after year, and you're not necessarily given the sort of spotlight that you should. But it is incredible what he's done since he stepped into Arsenal's first team on the back of the injury to Leno, wasn't it, at the time. But you actually look at from that moment to where he is now, what he's achieved and continues to achieve, and the performances he's putting in. You know, he's got to go down when he does retire as one of the world's greatest.
Yeah. I agree. I hadn't heard that comment from Carragher, actually. And just to quickly go back to Forster, just very quickly, it was interesting to note that Neville kept saying, just launch it. Why does he keep passing it out? Just launch it. So he did a couple of times. And what happened? He just gifted the possession straight to Manchester United.
And this is where, you know, and I know we obviously spend too much time on this podcast talking about the commentators and what they say, but I think it's still quite an archaic view that a lot of them have on football, and they're looking at it as to when they played. And I get it, because I do it myself to an extent, where there's moments where you think, oh, I should have just done that. But then it is when you see a Martinez play that sort of ball and how quickly that can result in a goal. And also, you know, with these teams now, it's so tough to gain possession in the Premier League. You know, you look at the teams that are possession-based, and the majority of them are obviously doing that bit better, but it's so tough to gain possession. So, of course, the managers, the modern managers that are out there, they don't want to gift away possession of the ball, because to win it back, of course, you're working that much harder to actually get possession back as well. So, you know, of course, the managers are going down this route, but so many of the commentators are still seeing it from 20, 30 years ago when it was a very, very different game, and the way in which teams played and the way in which you built attacks was very different. It was very much get it into the attacking third as quick as you can, gain possession, and then look to play in their half. Whereas now, you know, you see the majority of the play is in your defensive third, but you only need that one ball to then slice them open, and then you're in against their back line. But so many of the commentators are still talking about the game as if it is a different game to what we're watching now.
Cracking save from Stefan Ortega in that game as well. It reminded me a lot, that save, of the save that Joe Hart made. I don't know whether you remember that one, against Slovakia. It was the only game, the first and only game of Sam Allardyce in England, but Joe Hart made a very, very similar save.
Yeah, I do remember. It was interesting when he made the save, and look, it's a fantastic save. A few were sort of asking the question as to whether it was better or worse than the Emi Martinez. Probably comes back to the conversation we had last week. And again, I don't think you can really compare the two saves. And if anything, Emi Martinez's save did require a lot more and a lot of different things, different attributes in order to make the save. But no, it's fantastic. I think for the fact that his movement's very good, he sets himself in a really good position and has to be quite unorthodox to get himself back there and be able to claw it out in the way that he did. And you know, when they show the replays, and you're literally talking an inch, if that, for it crossing the line. But it's not only that, it's to be able to get the full hand and drag it back out in the way that he did. Really athletic as well, in terms of actually getting himself up there and being able to get his body in a position to drag it back. It's a top save.
There was a moment late in that game as well where Ortega seemingly wasn't completely au fait with footballing rules. Did you notice that? So it was a thigh pass back. I don't know who from, maybe Guardiola, I think it was. And Ortega received it and then, yeah, took a few touches and then launched it. And you could see that Guardiola was saying, pick it up. I've passed it back with my thigh. Pick it up. He didn't know the rules.
True. Do you know what, though? Again, talking purely from a perspective of being involved in situations like that, and I think goalkeepers will be able to relate to this, in that there are those moments where you're like, did he pass it back or did he thigh it back? Like, can I pick this up? You have that slight doubt in your mind. And I know it would have been exactly that, where I'm sure he does know the rules, but in that moment where it's all so quick, the ball's come back to you and you're like, I'm pretty sure he's just thighed that back to me. I probably can pick this up, but do I just go safe and just play with my feet, or do I pick it up? So I'm sure it's that. I don't think it's a case of him not knowing the rules. I think it was just a bit of a moment of panic and thinking, I'm going to go safe here. I'm going to not pick it up. I'll look to play out, look to kick long. And that's what he did.
Okay, interesting. Three very quick ones. Brentford 0, Nottingham Forest 2, Southampton 0, Fulham 0, Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 3. So in the first one, Matt Sells, really good save from Christopher Ayer. Mark Flecken, a really good save from Chris Wood. In the second, Aaron Ramsdale back in for Southampton with his webbed gloves. Really good save from Harry Wilson. And in the third, Kepa Arrizabalaga, a really good save in the second half from Rasmus Højlund.
Yeah, a few things to talk about there. Firstly, the Aaron Ramsdale gloves. I kept reading that he was wearing four-fingered gloves, and I'm sure that term can't be correct, because surely it's three fingers and a thumb. But maybe you can help me with this, Matt.
Four-finger... Well, yeah. I mean, semantics, right? I guess they're calling it four fingers because there are four compartments. I guess they're factoring in the thumb as a finger.
Okay, fair enough. But yes, he was wearing the webbed gloves. I actually prefer that as a term. But do you know what? I wanted to talk about this save, because I thought this was, and again, there probably wasn't as much made about the save as it should have been, because you actually watch it again, and it's struck with such force from, what, 6 yards? And it's going above his head. It's not one of them where it hits him. He has to react to this. And I think, firstly, the movement to get himself in position, the set position's bang on, but the speed of reactions are ridiculous to actually get his hands up and make the save. I thought this was one of the top saves of the weekend. No doubt, Southampton, pleased to see him back, and certainly looks like he's come back very, very sharp. Yeah, and to mention Flecken, I know we've spoken about him quite a few times now recently, and again, in a really positive light. You know, I thought he was very, very good again. And I wanted to mention the Kepa save. I'm right in saying this was at 2-0 or 3-0, I can't remember now. But, you know, again, it could have been a moment that changed the game. You know, we've seen lots of saves like that this weekend where you think, had that gone in, what might have happened? But I thought this was a top save, like positionally, very, very good. But the speed at which he gets down to his left fingertips, just a beautiful save where it just goes round the post. But again, I think it's a big moment in that particular game. And another big moment for Kepa. Again, it's quite a big season for him, really, to try and rebuild to an extent. But certainly games like this won't do him any harm.
Two more games to go in the Premier League. Before I come to the first of those two, Richard, a quick Christmas quiz. Who has prevented the most goals in the Premier League so far this season?
What, according to XG?
Yes, minimum of 20 shots faced.
Ooh, who's prevented the most? Do you know what? I actually don't know. Go on, hit me.
Mads Hermansson.
Interesting.
6.44. Just to finish the list of the top five is Lucas Fabianski, Dean Henderson, Andre Onana and Vicario. Fifth in that list. But the reason I bring it up is because Danny Ward was in for Leicester at the weekend. His first start in the Premier League since March 2023. It's not like he's brand new and hasn't played for a while. He played 12 times last year. That was all for Wales. And he's played in the Cup for Leicester this season. But the three goals conceded, he was criticised for all. Although, incidentally, if we're going to refer back to Opta, none of the three goals were given as Ward errors. So they've not put it down as Danny Ward errors for those three goals. However, the fans, who gave sarcastic applause throughout the game when he was collecting the ball at times, which you never, ever like to see, certainly thought, yeah, that he was in the wrong.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because I think you look at all three in isolation. Firstly, for the fact that, you know, he hasn't played that much football other than national team. You know, hasn't played that much football now for a period of time. So to step into a game like this, it's always going to be difficult. Naturally, for a goalkeeper, it can take a bit of time to really get up to speed. There's only so much you can do in training to replicate what you face in a Premier League game. And I think when you look at all three in isolation, can they be saved? Yes, you know, and I think goalkeepers that are playing regularly, you know, do they feel like they may be able to save these potentially? But you're right, none are errors. Like each one, you know, whether it's the one on the angle where he kind of gets fingertips to another one sort of at the angle again on another day, he might save this. It was a bit of a tricky one, the through ball where he kind of ends up prone on his back.
It's a bit weird that. It was like he suddenly decided to play dead.
Yeah, because it's, and again, it's one of them where he's, you know, you've got a decision to make in that moment. And again, the guy gets the touch. And at that point, you know, there's nothing you can do. It just is what it is. And he just lies down and, you know, he knows the ball's going to end up in the net. So it's, yeah, I feel for him really. And I kind of feel like, does a Danny Ward that's played the last 10 games save these? Quite possibly. You know, I don't think it's one where you can look and be too critical because, you know, like I say, on another day, and I think if it's one that with 3-4 games in, he possibly does have that little bit more sharpness and he can make these saves. But again, this is where it's so difficult for a number two goalkeeper to step in to be the number one. You know, when you're not playing regularly, I think, and a lot of goalkeepers will appreciate this, but not necessarily people that are watching and watch their team week in, week out, you kind of expect a certain level, but it is so tough to go from just training to suddenly playing a Premier League game, best league in the world, the speed at which this is happening, you know, you can't really replicate that outside of that. So you always kind of hope that when you step in, it might be a quiet game. Unfortunately for him, it wasn't in this situation. He's had a few moments where on another day, perhaps he makes a save. But as I mentioned, I put it down to that.
And finally, at Goodison Park, Everton 0, Chelsea 0. And I guess because we are reaching the end of the year, we can kind of do a review of sorts. And I'd like to do one on Jordan Pickford, because I think the weekend for me was the straw that broke the camel's back when it comes to Pickford and just trying to figure out what type of goalkeeper he is. Because it's fair to say he's one of the oddest goalkeepers that I know. Not in himself, but just in terms of perception from others. This is a guy who's been a Premier League mainstay since, what, 2016 now? He's been England's number one for the best part of six, seven odd years. 60, 70 plus caps in that time. He's barely missed a game since he's been in the top flight. I guess you could say he's certainly a Premier League custodian. It's tricky throwing the word legend about, but I'd guess he'd be in the pantheon of great Everton goalkeepers over the years. I think he's actually won their Player of the Year for the past 3 years. I think it's two or three years he's won their Player of the Year. However, and it's a big however, I've not known a goalkeeper with those credentials to split opinion as much as Pickford does. And this isn't just from fans or pundits. It's from people within the game. You speak to so many people within goalkeeping and they are not having Jordan Pickford. So many people are not having him. Yet he's still, don't know how to describe this, he's still Jordan Pickford, if you know what I mean by that. And it's mad because last week we're talking about a vintage Pickford performance with a clean sheet and a man of the match display against Arsenal, at Arsenal. Yet this week, we're also talking about vintage Pickford, but for completely different reasons. He still kept a clean sheet, but it's like he's, I don't know, he's so charged. It's like he's done it off the back of sinking like 5 Red Bulls before he's gone out there. For the record, by the way, I like him. I like him a lot. But he just has these games from time to time that make you wonder where his head's at and what type of goalkeeper he really is.
Yeah, do you know what I'll say in defence of him? I think, you know, I watched this game live and the conditions were horrific. And I know they were up and down the country. They have been for the last week or two. But the wind was so bad. So I think the thing with this performance was, and Jay Given gave quite a good analysis, to be fair, on Match of the Day, I think it was, where, you know, he spoke a lot about the decision making and certainly the ones where balls play down the line and he's sort of come rushing out thinking he's going to get there. Given the benefit of the doubt, I do think the win would have played a part where he thought at first, I can get to this, then he hasn't. And then he's actually made good decisions thereafter where he's maybe set in a really unusual position to make a save. You know, a couple of moments, there was one I know Shea Given picked on where there was the ball then broke, so the player was going to have a shot from the angle and he's come sprinting out and lunged in. Again, I kind of get it. Like, he knew he could get close enough. Now, whether the technique he went with was the right technique or whether it was a bit dangerous or what have you, again, as a goalkeeper, I know in that moment, all you're thinking is, I want to make the save. So you're sprinting out to the player, throwing everything on the line, hoping that you make the save. But it was, I thought it was one of those performances where it was, yeah, probably from a decision in point of view, not necessarily his finest, in that there were a few moments where you might have questioned. At the same time, and this is where we speak about Jordan Pickford a lot, you know, he is a winner. Like, he always finds a way to make it work, you know, and ultimately he's kept a clean sheet here, made a big save on the line, did really well with this actually, where he's kind of turned in, set on the line, very quick reactions to make the save with his foot, you know, and he has big moments at big times. And I'd agree, he's quite a curious goalkeeper to watch, in that certain techniques at times you'd question, certain decisions at times you'd question, but more often than not, when it matters, whether that be for Everton, whether that be for England, he does show up and he does make those big saves. But again, I'm not disagreeing with a lot of what you said there, because, you know, I know that, yeah, you speak to a lot of people in the goalkeeping fraternity, he does certainly split opinion.
So pen or no pen?
For that one where he came lunging out, again, as a goalkeeper, I'd say no pen, just for the fact that, you know, his intention is on making the save. I appreciate when you see it on the replay, it's, you know, it can look a little bit dangerous when he's sort of lunging in with studs up and so on and so forth. But I think as a goalkeeper in that moment, all you're thinking is, I want to come and make a block, so I'm going to come sprinting out and just jump at him. And again, whether the technique then constitutes and should be a penalty, you know, I think from a goalkeeper's perspective, you say no pen.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship with James Beadle and Bradley Collins, who both made similar stops in respective games against Stoke and Portsmouth. The difference being that Beadle's double stop from Tom Cannon was cleared to safety. Collins, however, twice saved from Colby Bishop, only for Callum Lang to smash in the rebound. Sheffield Wednesday beat Stoke with a penalty save in there as well from Beadle. Good performance from him. Coventry, however, losing at Pompey. James Trafford, it's been quite customary for him to have relatively quiet days for Burnley this season. Another one at the weekend in their win over Watford. But that didn't stop him from producing the goods when he was called upon. A really good tip over from Francisco Sierralta with a fair bit of time left on the clock too. So an important save there. They won 2-1. Freddie Woodman kept Preston in front at Loftus Road. Instinctive reactions to tip over a header from Ryan Coley. A really good save that, and a double save in the second half as well. However, many howevers on the podcast this week. The home side battled back to win 2-1 in that one, as did Luton at home to Derby. So two late goals here, two horrid deflections. They had been kept at bay up to that point by Jacob Zetterstrom. Really powerful parry from Carlton Morris with Derby in front at the time. But yes, Luton bringing it back at the Kenny.
Yeah, the two I was going to mention this week, certainly you mentioned them, James Trafford. We haven't actually spoke about him too much for the fact that he's been very, very consistent. I know his stats are very good this season, obviously very few goals conceded. But again, big moments when it matters. Really good tip over this one. Good reactions, athleticism to get himself up and get the fingertips to it. And James Beadle, two big moments. Another game that I watched. Yeah, really impressed with him in that, you know, I keep saying it about the conditions at the moment, but conditions at Hillsborough were really difficult in particular. But just two key moments. The fact they were down to 10 men second half, 0-0 at the time. They obviously got the goal, were under the cosh a bit, but huge reaction save. And it was actually the second save as well. Like the fact that he's managed to get a hand to it, react so quickly then to claw it out on the second attempt, and then the penalty save, you know, to make sure that it wasn't going to be a nervy last few minutes. I actually saw the interview with him afterwards where I thought he spoke really well and said, you know, essentially kind of, and I think this is pretty much most goalkeepers have this sort of belief, if I go the right way, I believe I'll make the save, you know, and you could sense that with him. And in fairness, it's been pretty much true watching him with the penalties that he has faced the last couple of seasons. But yeah, I thought those two in particular, very, very good.
Into League One, where there were four elite saves I'd like to talk about first. So one from Murphy Cooper, a tip over from Jordan Rhodes in a goalless draw between Blackpool and Stevenage. Joe Whitworth, as Exeter came from behind to beat Burton, he kept out Billy Bowden with a point-blank stop at one apiece. I think that one came off his chest. Franco Ravazzoli with practically the last touch of the game in another goalless draw. Wickham and Bolton in that one. So George Thomason with a volley right at the death. A really good save, this one. It came through bodies. He parried the shot and then reacted so well to gather the loose ball. And finally, Jojo Wallacott from Adam Stansfield in last night's win for Birmingham over Crawley.
Yeah, it's a really good save from Wallacott. It's going right in the top corner. I thought speed of feet and ability to get himself up to his right-hand side. Top, top save, this one. And Murphy Cooper, as you mentioned, you actually watch this again. The athleticism he shows to actually get himself almost back on himself slightly to get the fingertips to it and get it over the bar. Very good. And probably finally, just to mention Ravazzoli again, I feel like we've mentioned him a few more times on the pod recently, and rightly so, because again, not only holding the place down, which can be so difficult, we speak so often about a two becoming a one, but he's more than done that, really. And it seems like with each game, the number of clean sheets he's keeping and Wickham continuing their good run, and big saves and big moments within it.
And two more goalkeepers in League One I'd like to quickly touch on. Josh Keighley, the first of those, clean sheets at Barnsley at the weekend, Leyton Orient romping to a 4-0 victory. But before Josh Keighley came into the side at the O's, they were in 18th spot. They played 10. They'd conceded 14. The goal difference was minus 4. They'd won 2, drawn 2 and lost 6. Since then, another 10 games on, played 20. They're in 15th. They've conceded 20, so that's just 6 more. Their goal difference is now plus 3. They've won 7, drawn 4, and lost 9. So quite a decent deadline day acquisition from Leyton Orient there. And everything comes, Richard, to he who waits, and then waits a little bit more, and then a little bit more, and then as a former manager going to a League One club who wants to change things, thus calling upon one's services. Jamal Blackman, straight in at Shrewsbury, having played one league game since August of last year, and that was 6 months ago. They drew 2-2 at Wigan. He made a decent one-on-one save. He made a decent claim near the end, and he also had a shot on target. Not a bad comeback.
There you go. And yet, do you know what we said earlier about Danny Ward stepping in when, you know, you haven't played for a little while? I think even more so, a performance like this where, from what I understand, I think Jamal Blackman's been sort of keeping himself fit, you know, continuing to train despite being out of contract. But to suddenly be thrown into the mix like that at League One level and put in a performance, huge credit to him, because it's not an easy thing to do. And Josh Keighley, as you mentioned, like, it was very much deadline day and not really with the idea of playing initially. You know, it was they needed more strength in the goalkeeping department. Seemed like a nice relationship between Orient and Spurs to allow that to happen. But it's these kind of things that can happen that can be the making of a goalkeeper. You know, he stepped in, he's done so well, of course, got his goal a couple of weeks ago that we touched on, and the number of clean sheets and the number of good performances now. I'm fascinated to see what Orient do in the new year, in that, you know, you wonder whether they go into the market for a goalkeeper, where he's come in and done as well as he has he now established himself very much as that number one for the remainder of the season? He's certainly done all that he can, I think.
And finally, in League Two, Luke McGee, 8 saves and a 4th defeat in 6 games for Tranmere. We rarely mention Luke McGee. He rarely makes an error, and he kept the score down at Doncaster with a series of fine stops. And the same applies to James Belshaw, 6 saves from him as Harrogate lost at home to Walsall. There were hazardous conditions in North Yorkshire. They were already 2-0 down when he tipped over Taylor Allen's free kick. but what a tip over it was. Great save, that one. Fleetwood were also 2-0 down when Dave Harrington made a cracking save from Emil Aqua in the second half of their defeat at Barrow. Salford were goalless with Accrington when Matty Young saved from Tyler Walton in the first half. They went on to score twice after the restart and win 2-0. And Max Thompson ensured Chesterfield made it four wins on the trot in all competitions with an injury time save from Joe Piggott of AFC Wimbledon. Elsewhere, Nick Townsend with one of the most creative passes you'll see this season as Newport smashed at MK Dons 6-3. Again, the conditions might have played a part in that one. And Port Vale, held at home by Carlisle. It was 0-0, but should have Carlisle been awarded a goal early on when Luke Armstrong collided with Connor Ripley in what, to me, appeared to be a routine coming together? Foul or no foul?
Okay, well, Matthew, of course I'm going to say foul. For the fact that he's gone in with studs up, you know, quite dangerous as far as I'm concerned. Although I can fully appreciate why you're looking at me and from an outfield perspective, you're saying no foul. From a goalkeeping perspective?
I think the goal should have been given.
Okay, fair enough. I think for the fact that he's gone in with his studs up, I just think that that's where the potential danger is. And for a goalkeeper, because also if he doesn't go in with his studs up, if he goes in more like laces, it might then impact what the goalkeeper does. You're kind of aware if someone's coming in with their studs up. That's my sort of thinking towards it. So naturally you might react slightly differently.
I guess there's no other way that he can go in. I mean, it's very difficult to go in with your laces when you're in that position. You can't bring your foot round to go in with your laces because you're then, I mean, the ball's going to go upwards, isn't it? So you kind of have to go with your studs facing.
Yeah, which is why it's a foul. No, but you know what I mean? Because I get it. You're right. There's nothing else he could have done in that moment. But the moment he is then going in with his studs, which are going into Ripley's chest, I just know as a goalkeeper, if I'm sort of coming out and I can see studs pretty much coming in my face, then I'm maybe changing what I do ever so slightly for the fact that you just want to protect yourself in that moment. So whereas if he goes in with his laces or tries to, he probably can't get there, of course. But then naturally as a goalkeeper, you're doing something slightly different. You're probably going in a little bit more forcefully to try and hold the ball. So I think for the fact that, yes, he can't do anything different, but the fact he's gone in with his studs is why it would be the foul for me.
And I guess quite topical, because if you are Gianluigi Donnarumma, you end up with 10 staples in your cheek.
There you go. There you go. I just, look, I appreciate every single outfield pundit looking at this is going to be saying it's a ridiculous decision, da da da. But it's that for me, as it changes the whole situation. If he's, of course, he can't get there with his laces, but that's what he has to do, really, in that moment. The moment he puts his studs up, the goalkeeper's going to change what he does. And so because of that, I think it has to be a foul, even if you look at it as a coming together. Ultimately, at the point of impact, yes, he gets to the ball, but the studs then hit the goalkeeper. So for that reason, you know, I think it has to be a foul.
Okay, and pick of the bunch from the others, I would go with James Belshaw, I think.
Yeah, big day for him. You mentioned Luke McGee as well. You know, really busy afternoons for both of them. I know we keep touching on it, but the conditions up and down the country, once again, is the hardest period at the moment, I find, for goalkeepers. We talk about it every year, but December, January, February, you know, when you're playing in these conditions, it can be so tough to actually come out of the games with all that much credit, you know, when the wind's swirling and the rain's pouring. But you see some of these performances even more so given the conditions. A big well done to them. Clean Sheet Club. And once again, he is shaking his head at me, which means it won't be me this week. And I don't think he's overly delighted, but it is time for this.
Pathetic, Richard. Pathetic. It's festive Clean Sheet Club as well. So I took the time. Yeah, I took the time to make this nice and Christmassy for you.
Okay, I'm actually quite excited to hear it then.
Well, let's not over-egg it. Let's not over-eggnog it.
Oh, no.
Okay. Starting in the Premier League, Matt Sells, Jingle Bells. Martin Dubravka still 100% into the Championship. James Beadle rocking around the Hillsborough tree. Michael Cooper, hat-trick. Ian Melier, not just three French hens, 12 days of shutouts. Lucas Jensen, we keep our distance, but he still catches our eye. into League One. Jacob Chapman, six blanks are blanking. Franco Ravazzoli, is he hanging up his clean sheets on the wall? Nathan Baxter, first since returning. George Wickens, 2-3. Josh Keeley, oh, here he is. Merry Blankmas, Harry Tyra. When the cleanman brings the cleans. Murphy Cooper, sheets as white as snow. Christy Pym, Christmas Pym. Ashley Maynard Brewer, snowball effect. Ryan Alsop, make his wish come true. And into League Two. Philip Marshall, presented with a new deal. Matt Macy, sound the siren. Five golden cleans. Paul Farman, making it reindeer. Matt Young, it's only just begun. Max Thompson, hat-trick mark two. Tommy Simkin, don't let the blanks end. Grant Smith, a time for saving and diving to clean. Alex Bass, par rum-pum-pum-pum. Connor Ripley, it'll be goalless this Christmas. Gabriel Breeze, angelic. The Angel Gabriel.
Very good. What was your favourite out of all of them? Because I know you must have a couple.
The one I was looking forward to you reading, I think probably par rum pum pum pum. I wanted to see how you did with that one.
Yeah, I'd have struggled with that. There were some really good ones in there. Mixed in with just like your basic hat trick, you know. I liked it.
Okay, and the table is pretty much as it was. Michael Cooper still top of the pile with 14 in 20. James Trafford and Ian Melier both on 12. Trafford in 21 and Melier in 22. But a mention, a nod of the head to Murphy Cooper, who is the first goalkeeper outside of the Championship to reach 10, double digits, 10 in 17.
Yeah, it's very good, 10 and 17. It is hotting up, isn't it, going into 2025?
It is indeed. And just three bits of fun to finish, Richard. The first of those is Glentoran goalkeeper Daniel Gioli, who scored from his own half against Cliftonville at the weekend. It was an equaliser. So a great strike, this, from Gioli.
It was. And it was. I feel like we've seen this goal too many times. You know, it's that one where kind of gets caught in the wind a little bit, bounces, deceives the goalkeeper and heads over him into the to the back of the net. But no, great strike. Don't take anything away from it. At the same time, do feel for the opposition goalkeeper.
I think I need to correct myself here as well, because I was called out on this last time when I pronounced his name. He used to be at Peterborough, didn't he? I think it's Daniel Gioli. I think that's how you pronounce his surname, not Gioli.
Yeah, well, you started the pod with a mistake and you finished one with a mistake. So, you know, hopefully better in 2025.
Someone else making a mistake is James McFadden, who claimed that Kevin Dabrowski should have caught a shot from Jack Thompson in Wraith Rovers' win over Queen's Park. Even the commentator called him out and said, that is harsh.
Yep, absolutely ridiculous commentary. I'm so glad they called him out in the moment, because it's a top, top save. And yep, should have held it. I mean, that is a classic, classic outfield commentator looking at it in super slow motion and thinking that maybe they could have held it. But no, top save.
And finally, we saw earlier on in the season in the National League South, Woody Williamson of Chelmsford coming on and going up front and nearly scoring after he was brought on off the bench. And the same thing has happened at Maidstone. Lenny Holden has come on. He was the last man left on the bench. One of the lads from Maidstone was injured, had to go off. So Lenny came on. They were 4-0 up against Farnborough, but very similar. He didn't quite get his head to a cross, but very close. And he's come on for the last few minutes as a striker, his debut.
Well, there you go. We like it. We like it. Just, you know, come on and make an impact. That's what goalkeepers do. Throw them on up front, they'll make an impact.
Lovely stuff. Right, Richard, any plans for tomorrow, for Christmas Day?
No, just the calm before the January storm. Yourself?
Yes. Well, the usual, with the family. Plenty of food, plenty of merriment, plenty of board games, probably, come the evening. All good stuff.
I can imagine you love a board game. That is you all over.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.
Wait.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.